The sedan chair came to a halt outside Pseudopolis Yard. Vimes left the runners to park it and strode in, putting his coat back on. There had been a time, and it seemed like only yesterday, when the watch house had been almost empty. There'd be old Sergeant Colon dozing in his chair, and Corporal Nobbs's washing drying in front of the stove, and then suddenly it had all changed. Sergeant Colon was waiting for him with a clipboard.
"Got the report from the other watch houses, sir?" he said, trotting along beside Vimes. "Anything special? Been a bit of an odd murder, sir, down in one of them old houses on Misbegot Bridge. Some old priest, don't know much about it. The patrol just said it ought to be looked at."
"Who found him?"
"Constable Visit, sir."
"Oh, gods."
"Yes, sir."
"I'll try to get along there this morning. Anything else?"
"Corporal Nobbs is sick, sir."
"Oh, I know that."
"I mean, off sick, sir."
"Not his granny's funeral this time?"
"No, sir."
"How many has he had this year, by the way?"
7, sir."
"Very odd family, the Nobbses."
"Yes, sir."
"Fred, you don't have to keep calling me sir."
"Got company, sir?"
said the sergeant, glancing meaningfully towards a bench in the main office.
"Come for that alchemy job?"
A dwarf smiled nervously at Vimes.
"All right," said Vimes. "I'll see him in my office."
He reached into his coat and took out the assassin's money pouch.
"Put it in the Widows and Orphans Fund, will you, Fred?"
"Right. Oh, well done, sir. Any more windfalls like this and we'll soon be able to afford some more widows."
Sergeant Colon went back to his desk, surreptitiously opened his drawer and pulled out the book he was reading. It was called Animal Husbandry. He'd been a bit worried about the title. You heard stories about strange folk in the country, but it turned out to be nothing more than a book about how cattle and pigs and sheep should breed. Now he was wondering where to get a book that taught them how to read. Upstairs, Vimes pushed open his office door carefully. The Assassin's Guild played to rules, you could say that about the bastards. It was terribly bad form to kill a bystander. Apart from anything else, you wouldn't get paid. So traps in his office were out of the question, because too many people were in and out of it every day. Even so, it paid to be careful. Vimes was good at making the kind of rich enemies who could afford to employ assassins. The assassins had to be lucky only once, but Vimes had to be lucky all the time. He slipped into the room and glanced out of the window. He liked to work with it open, even in cold weather. He liked to hear the sounds of the city. But anyone trying to climb up or down to it would run into everything in the way of loose tiles, shifting handholds, and treacherous drain pipes that Vimes's ingenuity could contrive. And Vimes had installed spiked railings down below. They were nice and ornamental, but they were, above all, spiky. So far, Vimes was winning. There was a tentative knock at the door. It had issued from the knuckles of the dwarf applicant. Vimes ushered him into the office, shut the door, and sat down at his desk.
"So," he said, "you're an alchemist. Acid stains on your hands and no eyebrows."
"That's right, sir."
"Not usual to find a dwarf in that line of work. You people always seem to toil in your uncle's foundry or something."
"You people," the dwarf noted.
"Can't get the hang of metal," he said.
"A dwarf who can't get the hang of metal? That must be unique."
"Pretty rare, sir, but I was quite good at alchemy."
"Guild member?"
"Not any more, sir."
"Oh, how did you leave the guild?"
"Through the roof, sir, but I'm pretty certain I know what I did wrong."
Vimes leaned back. "The alchemists are always blowing things up. I'd never heard of them getting sacked for it."
"That's because no one's ever blown up the guild council, sir."
"What, all of it?"
"Most of it, sir. All the easily detachable bits, at least."
Vimes found he was automatically opening the bottom drawer of his desk. He pushed it shut again and instead shuffled the papers in front of him.
"What's your name, lad?"
The dwarf swallowed. This was clearly the bit he'd been dreading.
Little Bottom, sir."
Vimes didn't even look up.
"Ah, yes, it says here. That means you're from the Uberwald Mountain area, yes?"
"Why, yes, sir,"
said Littlebottom, mildly surprised. Humans generally couldn't distinguish between dwarf clans.
"Our Constable Angua comes from there," said Vimes. "Now, it says here your first name is... can't read Fred's handwriting.
There was nothing for it.
"Cheery, sir."
said cheery little Bottom.
"Cheery, eh? Good to see the old naming traditions kept up. Cheery little Bottom, fine."
Little Bottom watched carefully. Not the faintest glimmer of amusement had crossed Vimes's face.
"Yes, sir. Cheery little Bottom," he said.
And there still wasn't as much as an extra wrinkle there.
"My father was jolly, jolly little Bottom," he added,
as one might prod at a bad tooth to see when the pain will come.
"Really?"
"And his father was beaky little Bottom."
Not a trace, not a smidgen of a grin twitched anywhere. Vimes merely pushed the paper aside.
"Well, we work for a living here, little Bottom."
"Yes, sir."
"We don't blow things up, little Bottom."
"No, sir, I don't blow everything up, sir. Some just melts."
Vimes drummed his fingers on the desk. "Know anything about dead bodies?"
"They were only mildly concussed, sir."
Vimes sighed.
"Listen, I know about how to be a copper. It's mainly walking and talking. But there's lots of things I don't know. You find the scene of a crime and there's some grey powder on the floor. What is it? I don't know. But you fellows know how to mix things up in bowls and can find out. And maybe the dead person doesn't seem to have a mark on them. Were they poisoned? It seems we need someone who knows what colour a liver is supposed to be. I want someone who can look at the ashtray and tell me what kind of cigars I smoke."
"Pentweed's Slim Panatellas," said Little Bottom automatically.
"Good gods.
You've left a packet on the table, sir."
Vimes looked down.
"All right," he said. "So sometimes it's an easy answer, but sometimes it isn't. Sometimes we don't even know if it was the right question." He stood up. "I can't say I like dwarfs much, Little Bottom, but I don't like trolls or humans either, so I suppose that's okay. Well, you're the only applicant. $30 a month, $5 living out allowance. I expect you to work to the job, not to the clock. And there's some mythical creature called Overtime. Only no one's ever seen its footprints. If troll officers call you a grit sucker, they're out, and if you call them rocks, you're out. We're just one big family, and when you've been to a few domestic disputes, Little Bottom, I can assure you that you'll see the resemblance. We work as a team, and we're pretty much making it up as we go along, and half the time we're not even certain what the law is, so it can get interesting. Technically, you'll rank as a corporal, only don't go giving orders to real policemen. You're on a month's trial, we'll give you some training just as soon as there's time. Now, find an iconograph and meet me on Misbegot Bridge in... Oh, damn. Better make it an hour. I've got to see about this blasted coat of arms. Ugh. Still, dead bodies seldom get deader. Sergeant Detritus?"
There was a series of creaks as something heavy moved along the corridor outside and a troll opened the door.
"Yes, sir?"
"This is Corporal Littlebottom. Corporal Cheery Littlebottom, whose father was Jolly Littlebottom. Give him his badge, swear him in, show him where everything is. Very good, Corporal?"
"I shall try to be a credit to the uniform, sir," said Littlebottom.
"Good," said Vimes briskly. He looked at Detritus.
"Incidentally, Sergeant, I've got a report here that a troll in uniform nailed one of Chrysoprase's henchmen to a wall by his ears last night. Know anything about that?"
The troll wrinkled its enormous forehead.
"Does it say anything about him selling bags of slab to troll kids?"
"No. It says he was going to read spiritual literature to his dear old mother," said Vimes.
"Did Hardcore say he saw this troll's badge?"
"No, but he says the troll threatened to ram it where the sun doesn't shine," said Vimes.
Detritus nodded gravely.
"That's a long way to go just to ruin a good badge," he said.
"By the way," said Vimes, "that was a lucky guess of yours, guessing it was Hardcore."
"It came to me in a flash, sir," said Detritus. "I thought, what bastard who sells slab to kids deserves being nailed up by his ears, sir? And bingo, this idea just formed in my head."
"That's what I thought."
Cheery Little Bottom looked from one impassive face to the other. The watchman's eyes never left each other's faces, but the words seemed to come from a little distance, as though both of them were reading an invisible script. Then Detritus shook his head slowly.
"Must have been an impostor, sir. It's easy to get helmets like ours. None of my trolls do anything like that. That would be police brutality, sir." "'Glad to hear it. Just for the look of the thing, though, I want you to check the troll's lockers. The Silicon Anti-Defamation League are onto this one.' "'Yes, sir. And if I find out it was one of my trolls, I will be down on that troll, like a ton of rectangular building things, sir.'
"'Fine. Well, off you go, Little Bottom. Detritus will look after you.' Little Bottom hesitated. This was uncanny. The man hadn't mentioned axes or gold. He hadn't even said anything like, "'You can make it big in the watch.' Little Bottom felt really unbalanced.
"'I did tell you my name, didn't I, sir?'
"'Yes, put it down here,' said Vimes. "'Cheery Little Bottom, yes?'
"'Yes, that's right. Well, thank you, sir.'
Vimes listened to them go down the passage. Then he carefully shut the door and put his coat over his head so that no one would hear him laughing.
"'Cheery Little Bottom!'
Cheery ran after the troll called Detritus. The watch house was beginning to fill up, and it was clear that the watch dealt with all sorts of things, and that many of them involved shouting. Two uniformed trolls were standing in front of Sergeant Colon's high desk, with a slightly smaller troll between them. This troll was wearing a downcast expression. It was also wearing a tutu, and had a small pair of gauze wings glued to its back.
"'Happen to know that trolls don't have any tradition of a tooth fairy,' Colon was saying. "'Especially not one called,' he looked down, "'Clinkerbell. "'So how about if we just call it breaking and entering without a Thieves' Guild license?'
"'It's racial prejudice, not letting trolls have a tooth fairy,'
Clinkerbell muttered. One of the troll guards upended a sack on the desk. Various items of silverware cascaded over the paperwork.
"'And this is what you found under their pillows, was it?' said Colon.
"'Bless their little hearts,' said Clinkerbell.
At the next desk a tired dwarf was arguing with a vampire.
"'Look,' he said, "'it's not murder. You're dead already, right?' "'He stuck them right in me.' "'Well, I've been down to interview the manager, and he said it was an accident. "'He said he's got nothing against vampires at all. "'He said he was merely carrying 3 boxes of HB eraser tips "'and tripped over the edge of your cloak.
"'I don't see why I can't work where I like.'
"'Yes, but... in a pencil factory?'
"'Detritus looked down at Little Bottom and grinned.
"'Welcome to life in the big city, Little Bottom,' he said. "'That's an interesting name.'
Is it?
Most dwarfs have names like Rockheaver or Strong in the Arm.
Oh, do they?
Detritus was not one for the fine detail of relationships, but the edge in Little Bottom's voice got through to him.
It's a good name, though, he said.
What's Slab? Said Cheery.
It's your chloric ammonium and radium mixed up. It give your head a tingle, but melts troll brains. Big problem in the mountains. And some buggers are making it here in the city, and we're trying to find out how it gets up there. Mr. Vimes is letting me run a,
Detritus concentrated.
Public awareness campaign, telling people what happens to buggers who sells it to kids.
He waved a hand at a large and rather crudely done poster on the wall. It said,
"Slab, just say, please, no!"
He pushed open a door.
"This is the old privy what we don't use no more. You can use it for mixing up stuff. It's the only place we got now. You have to clean it up first, 'cause it smells like a toilet in here."
He opened another door.
"And this is the locker room," he said. "You got your own peg and that, and there's these panels for getting changed behind, 'cause we knows you dwarfs is modest. A good life if you don't weaken. Mr. Vimes is okay, but he's a bit weird about some stuff. He keeping on saying stuff like, 'This city is a melting pot, and all the scum floats to the top,' and stuff like that. I'll give you your helmet and badge in a minute, but first..."
He opened a rather larger locker on the other side of the room, which had Detritus painted on it.
"I got to go and hide this hammer."
two figures hurried out of Iron Crust's dwarf bakery, to bread wi to edge, threw themselves onto the cart and shouted at the driver to leave urgently. He turned a pale face towards them and pointed to the road ahead. There was a wolf there. Not a usual kind of wolf. It had a blonde coat, which around its ears was almost long enough to be a mane, and wolves did not normally sit calmly on their haunches in the middle of a street. This one was growling, a long, low growl. It was the audible equivalent of a shortening fuse. The horse was transfixed, too frightened to stay where it was, but far too terrified to move. One of the men carefully reached for a crossbow. The growl rose slightly. He even more carefully took his hand away. The growl subsided again.
"What is it? It's a wolf. In a city? What does it find to eat?"
"Oh, why did you have to ask that?"
"Good morning, gentlemen," said Carrot, as he stopped leaning against the wall. "Looks like the fog's rising again. Thieves' Guild's licenses, please."
They turned. Carrot gave them a happy smile and nodded encouragingly. One of the men patted his coat in a theatrical display of absent-mindedness.
Left the house in a bit of a hurry this morning. Must have forgotten.
Section 2, Rule 1 of the Thieves' Guild Charter says that members must carry their cards on all professional occasions, said Carrot.
"He's not even drawn his sword," hissed the most stupid of the three strong gang. "He doesn't need to. He's got a loaded wolf."
Someone was writing in the gloom, the scritching of their pen the only sound, until a door creaked open. The writer turned quick as a bird.
"You! I told you never to come back here."
I know, but it's that damn thing. The production line stopped and it's got out and it's killed the priest."
"Did anyone see it?"
"In the fog we had last night, I shouldn't think so, but..."
"Then it is not a matter of significance."
"No, they're not supposed to kill people." "Well, that is," the speaker conceded, "not by smashing them on the head, anyway."
"They will, if so instructed."
"I never told it to. Anyway, what if it turns on me?"
"On its master? It can't disobey the words in its head, man."
The visitor sat down, shaking his head.
"Yeah, but which words? I don't know, this is getting too much. That damn thing around all the time."
"Making you a fat profit."
All right. But this other stuff, the poison, I never..."
"Shut up. I'll see you again tonight. You can tell the others that I certainly do have a candidate. And if you dare come here again..."
The Ankh-Morpork Royal College of Heralds turned out to be a green gate in a wall in Mollymog Street. Vimes tugged on the bell pull. Something clanged on the other side of the wall, and immediately the place erupted in a cacophony of hoots, growls, whistles, and trumpetings. A voice shouted,
"Down, boy, couchon! I said, couchon! No, not rempon! And thee shall have a sugar lump like a good boy! William, stop that at once! Put him down! Mildred, let go of Graham!"
The animal noises subsided a bit, and footsteps approached. A wicket gate in the main door opened a fraction. Vimes saw an inch-wide segment of a very short man.
"Yes? Are you the meat man?"
"Commander Vimes," said Vimes. "I have an appointment."
The animal noises started up again.
"Eh? Commander Vimes!" Vimes shouted.
"Oh, I suppose thee'd better come in."
The door swung open. Vimes stepped through. Silence fell. Several dozen pairs of eyes regarded Vimes with acute suspicion. Some of the eyes were small and red. Several were big and poked just above the surface of the scummy pond that occupied a lot of space in the yard. Some were on perches. The yard was full of animals. But even they were crowded out by the smell of a yard full of animals. And most of them were clearly very old, which didn't do anything for the smell. A toothless lion yawned at Vimes. A lion running, or at least lounging around loose, was amazing in itself, but not so amazing as the fact that it was being used as a cushion by an elderly griffin, which was asleep with all four claws in the air. There were hedgehogs, and a greying leopard, and molting pelicans. Green water surged in the pond, and a couple of hippos surfaced and yawned. Nothing was in a cage, and nothing was trying to eat anything else.
"Huh, it takes people like that first time," said the old man. He had a wooden leg. "We're quite a happy little family."
Vimes turned and found himself looking at a small owl.
"My gods," he said, "that's a moorpork, isn't it?"
The old man's face broke into a happy smile.
"Oh, I can see thee knows thy heraldry," he cackled. "Daphne's ancestors came all the way from some islands on the other side of the hub, so they did."
Vimes took out his city watch badge and stared at the coat of arms embossed thereon. The old man looked over his shoulder.
"That's not her, of course," he said, indicating the owl perched on the ankh. "That was her great-grandma, Olive. A moorpork on an ankh, see? That is a pun or play on words. Laugh I nearly started. That's about as funny as you gets round here. We could do with a mate for her, tell you the truth, and a female hippo. I mean, his lordship says we've got two hippos, which is right enough. I'm just saying it's not natural for Roderick and Keith. I ain't passing judgment. It's just not right, that's all I'm saying. What was thy name again?"
"Vimes. Sir Samuel Vimes. My wife made the appointment."
The old man cackled again.
"Ho, ho, ho! 'Tis usually so."
Moving quite fast, despite his wooden leg, the old man led the way through the steaming mounds of multi-species dung to the building on the other side of the yard.
"I expect this is good for the garden, anyway," said Vimes, trying to make conversation. "I tried it on my rhubarb," said the old man, pushing open the door, "but it grew to 20 feet tall, sir, and then spontaneously caught fire. Mind where the wivern's been, sir. He's been ill. Oh, what a shame. Never mind, it'll scrape off beautiful when it dries. In thee goes, sire."
The hall inside was as quiet and dark as the yard had been full of light and noise. There was the dry tombstone smell of old books and church towers. Above him, when his eyes got used to the darkness, Vimes could make out hanging flags and banners. There were a few windows, but cobwebs and dead flies meant that the light they allowed in was merely grey. The old man had shut the door and left him alone. Vimes watched through the window as he limped back to continue what he had been doing before Vimes's appearance. What he had been doing was setting up a living coat of arms. There was a large shield. Cabbages, actual cabbages, had been nailed to it. The old man said something that Vimes couldn't hear. The little owl fluttered from its perch and landed on a large ankh that had been glued to the top of the shield. The two hippos flopped out of their pool and took up station on either side. The old man unfolded an easel in front of the scene, placed a canvas on it, picked up a palette and brush, and shouted, "Hoopla!" The hippos reared, rather arthritically. The owl spread its wings.
"Good gods," murmured Vimes. "I always thought they just made it up."
"Made it up, sir? Made it up?" said a voice behind him. "We'd soon be in trouble if we made things up. Oh, dear me, yes."
Vimes turned. Another little old man had appeared behind him, blinking happily through thick glasses. He had several scrolls under one arm.
"I'm sorry I couldn't meet you at the gate, but we're very busy at the moment," he said, holding out his spare hand. "Croissant rouge pur suivant."
"You're a small red breakfast roll?" said Vimes, nonplussed.
"No, no, no. It means Red Crescent. It's my title, you see. Very ancient title. I'm a herald. You'd be Sir Samuel Vimes, yes?"
"Yes."
Red Crescent consulted a scroll.
"Good, good. How do you feel about weasels?" he said.
"Weasels?"
"We have got some weasels, you see. I know they're not strictly a heraldic animal, but we seem to have some on the strength, and frankly, I think I'm going to have to let them go unless we can persuade someone to adopt them, and that's upset Pardessus Chatain Pursuivant. He always locks himself in his shed when he's upset."
"Pardessus? You mean the old man out there?" said Vimes. "I mean, why is he... I thought you... I mean, a coat of arms is just a design. You don't have to paint it from life."
Red Crescent looked shocked.
"Well, I suppose if you want to make a complete mockery of the whole thing, yes, you could just make it up. You could do that," he said. "Anyway, not weasels, then?"
"Personally, I'd just as soon not bother," said Vimes, "and certainly not with a weasel. My wife said that dragons would..."
"Happily, the occasion will not arise," said a voice in the shadows.
It wasn't the right sort of voice to hear in any kind of light. It was dust dry. It sounded as if it came from a mouth that had never known the pleasures of spittle. It sounded dead. It was. The bakery thieves considered their options.
"I've got my hand on my crossbow," said the most enterprising of the three.
The most realistic said,
"Have you? Well, I've got my heart in my mouth."
said the third. "I've got a weak heart, me."
"Yeah, but what I mean is he's not even wearing a sword. If I take the wolf, the two of you should be able to deal with him with no trouble, right?"
The one clear thinker looked at Captain Carrot. His armour shone. So did the muscles on his bare arms. Even his knees gleamed. "It seems to me that we have a bit of an impasse, or standoff," said Captain Carrot.
"How about if we throw down the money?" said the clear thinker.
"That would certainly help matters."
"And you'd let us go?"
"No, but it would definitely count in your favour, and I would certainly speak up on your behalf."
The bold one with the crossbow licked his lips and glanced from Carrot to the wolf. "If you set it on us, I'll warn you, something's going to get killed," he warned.
"Yes, it could happen," said Carrot sadly. "I'd prefer to avoid that, if at all possible." He raised his hands. There was something flat and round and about 6 inches across in each one. "This," he said, "is dwarf bread. Some of Mr. Ironcrust's best. It's not classic battle bread, of course, but it's probably good enough for slicing." Carrot's arm blurred. There was a brief flurry of sawdust, and the flat loaf spun to a stop halfway through the thick timbers of the cart and about half an inch away from the man with the weak heart, and, as it turned out, a fragile bladder, too. The man with the crossbow tore his attention away from the bread only when he felt a slight damp pressure on his wrist. There was no way that an animal could have moved that fast, but there it was, and the wolf's expression contrived to indicate very calmly that if the animal so desired, the pressure could be increased, more or less, indefinitely.
"Call it off," he said, flinging the bow away with his free hand. "Tell it to let go."
"Oh, I never tell her anything," said Carrot. "She makes up her own mind."
There was a clatter of iron-shod boots, and half a dozen axe-bearing dwarfs raced out of the bakery gates, kicking up sparks as they skidded to a halt beside Carrot.
"Get them!"
shouted Mr. Ironcrust. Carrot dropped a hand on top of the dwarf's helmet and turned him round.
"It's me, Mr. Ironcrust," he said. "I believe these are the men."
"Right you are, Captain Carrot," said the dwarf baker. "Come on, lads, let's hang them up by the Boorazaka."
Town hall.
"Oh,"
murmured the weak of heart, damply.
"Not now, Mr. Ironcrust," said Carrot patiently. "We don't practice that punishment in Ankh-Morpork." Because Ankh-Morpork doesn't have a town hall.
"They bashed Bjorn Tightbritches senseless, and they kicked Olaf Strong in the arm in the bad kazas."
Yeast bowl.
"We'll cut the—"
"Mr. Ironcrust."
The dwarf baker hesitated, and then, to the amazement and relief of the thieves, took a step backwards.
"Yeah. All right, Captain Carrot, if you say so."
"I have business elsewhere, but I would be grateful if you would take them and turn them over to the Thieves' Guild," said Carrot.
The quick thinker went pale.
"Oh, no, they get really intense about unlicensed thieving. Anything but the Thieves' Guild."
Carrot turned. The light caught his face in a certain way.
"Anything," he said.
The unlicensed thieves looked at one another, and then all spoke at once.
"The Thieves' Guild, fine, no problem. We like the Thieves' Guild, can't wait. Thieves' Guild, here I come. Fine body of men, firm but fair."
"Good," said Carrot. "Then everyone's happy."
"Oh, yes." He dug into his money pouch. "Here's 5 pence for the loaf, Mr. Ironcrust. I've handled the other one, but you should be able to sand it off with no trouble." The dwarf blinked at the coins.
"You want to pay me for saving my money?" he said.
"As a taxpayer, you are entitled to the protection of the watch," said Carrot.
There was a delicate pause. Mr. Ironcrust stared at his feet. One or two of the other dwarfs started to snigger.
"I'll tell you what," said Carrot in a kindly voice. "I'll come round when I get a moment and help you fill in the forms. How about that?"
A thief broke the embarrassed silence.
"Could your little dog let go of my arm, please?"
The wolf released its grip, jumped down, and padded over to Carrot, who raised his hand to his helmet, respectfully.
"Good day to you all," he said, and strode away.
Thieves and victims watched him go.
"Is he real?" said the quick thinker.
There was a growl from the baker, then,
"You bastards!" he shouted. "You bastards!"
What? You got your money back, haven't you?"
Two of his employees had to hold Mr. Iron Crust back.
3 years, he said. 3 years, and no one bothered. 3 bloody years, and not so much as a knock at the door. And he'll ask me, oh, yes, he'll be nice about it. He'll probably even go and get the extra forms, so I won't be put to the trouble. Why couldn't you buggers have just run away?